In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, March 28th, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, it's Industry Chatter in the 3 o'clock hour. My guest is John Landwehr. He's Vice President for Digital Government Solutions for Adobe. John, it's great to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming in today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Happy to do it. Tell me about what you and your team do for government customers.
Sure. So I've been with Adobe for 10 years, the last 9 of which were in our San Jose headquarters. And I recently joined our federal team to look at how we can bring our commercial technologies to help the public sector, whether it's internally or externally facing out to the citizen.
Is it your sense that agencies are more open, more receptive to commercial solutions than they've been in the past?
We're certainly seeing that as a cost savings as well as a way to deploy software more quickly. That can help with all sorts of citizen engagement where there are proven solutions that have been deployed in the commercial world, let's say to banks or telecommunication companies that can then be brought for the same kind of public-facing services, in this case out to the citizens.
What are some of the areas that you play in at Adobe in particular that maybe somebody – I mean, I guess most people probably think you're the PDF people and you're the reader people, and I'm a big fan of Audition, the audio editing software platform. But I imagine there are a lot of things that you're doing in these spaces that people don't even think of your company as playing in.
Yes, we've been around for 30 years now, certainly have our roots in helping – create content, Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, basically making content for digital consumption. We also have a variety of tools to help organizations manage that content, so web content management, document services. We have products that also help organizations measure their interactivity and their engagement, whether it's to their employees or, again, out to the public, and how effective they are at being publishing various types of content, whether it's out to desktops or mobile devices. And then kind of the fourth area really is that mobility, where we're seeing huge growth in terms of how content is being consumed digitally. Now that smartphones are outselling PCs and tablets are just about to catch up.
I want to talk more about the mobility piece in a little bit, but I'm curious, since you have been so relatively recently in the commercial space and dealing with commercial customers, what's the biggest difference that you see in commercial customers that you dealt with and now federal customers that you deal with?
Well, we've worked with a lot of commercial organizations, both in the U.S. as well as around the world, and in the public sector. Certainly there's a lot about how to engage with the citizens and make sure that there are tenets of accessibility to making content available to a variety of people, also having kind of information published that is open, easily consumed. And, you know, within the commercial world, there are different pressures like time to market, competitive pressures, organizations competing for your dollars for retail purchasing, that sort of thing. And within the government, it's a lot about providing citizen services. Again, what's best for the people in providing them electronic services, and kind of a lot around self-service types of applications where you can fill out forms online instead of having to call on the phone or stand in line at a kind of a branch government office to fill something out. So there are similarities, of course, with a lot of the self-service applications that have taken place in the commercial world, but really, you know, it's a strong focus on supporting the people.
How do those differences and similarities impact the way that you present what you have to offer to the customers in the federal space?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes we're seeing over the last couple of years, again, has been around mobility, where a lot of the websites aren't viewable on mobile devices. And with the surge in smartphones and tablets, now those people can't engage electronically. And it's not just affecting the higher end demographics, it's affecting all demographics, where I think there were statistics on a third of smartphone purchases are from users with less than $35,000 a year annual income. And you don't want to leave any demographic out when you're providing services out to the people. So we've already seen in the commercial world a big surge for mobile websites and mobile applications, a lot going into the app stores for news, weather, sports, social, finance, your utilities. And that's an area where I think the public sector still needs to catch up a little bit, because a lot of the existing websites, again, don't render on the mobile device and therefore are not providing any self-service or engagement out to the public.
The mobility issue was challenging for the federal government at first, in particular because you mentioned mobile apps. And at the beginning of kind of the mobile revolution, the iPhone kind of led things off, and it was really fun and sexy to go and create an iPhone app. And then the agencies found out, as you were just talking about, there were a whole bunch of people that couldn't access it because they were using other kinds of
right.
devices. Are you starting to see that shake out? Are you starting to see some maybe codification of which direction to go in when it comes to mobile app versus web app versus some of the all the different
well, I think that's
categories?
A great topic and something that organizations really need to think about. Should they have a traditional website accessible in a browser, whether it's on a desktop, a tablet, or a mobile phone, and or should they have an installable app that shows up in the app stores? And typically what we recommend is thinking about how frequently the user will interact with the app. If they're going to use that information on a daily or even weekly basis, then having the installable app with the icon on your home screen that makes it easy to jump right in there or get pop-up notifications, I think is very important. If you simply want to have your information be easily discoverable and searchable on a less frequent basis, then having a website that is optimized for multiple channels, I think, is very important. And fortunately now there are tools that can make it easy to simultaneously publish the information both on traditional desktops, smartphone browsers, tablet browsers, and even simultaneously publish that information into the mobile apps as well.
Now, that differentiation there that you made, too, is one that I'm just starting to hear, and that's the differentiation between the smartphone as a separate category of mobile device and the tablet as another category of mobile device, where until recently it seems that it's been either mobile or desktop, and that's pretty much been the differentiation. What is driving that, and why is the space that's on, I'm holding up my iPhone, so dramatically different from the user's perspective than the space that's on a tablet computer?
Well, it's a lot about the screen size. Mm-hmm. And when you are working with any type of content, you don't want to have to pinch and zoom and pan and scroll around too much. So using technologies that can dynamically optimize the content, say from a 3-column layout on a desktop to a 2-column on a tablet, maybe to a 1-column on a smartphone, then makes the fonts and everything more readable on that device. And because there are now a wide range of screen sizes from, you know, the small 3-inch screens on traditional feature flip phones to the smartphones like the iPhone to tablets like iPads, now to desktops. And, of course, another factor we're seeing is even TVs have web browsers in them. And you really don't want to have the lowest common denominator interface that may look fine on the small screen, but then you put it on the big screen and it's unreadable because everything's too big. And that, I think, is where technology is helping to look at what devices are trying to consume the information and then, again, dynamically adjust to say, oh, I know this is an iPad. I'm going to format the screen to look good on an iPad or an Android tablet. And at the same time, if it sees a desktop user or a smartphone user come in, adjust the columns, adjust the style sheet to make it look good on any device.
Now, in the year that you've been working in this market, how have the questions or concerns or problems, struggles that agencies are working on, how have they evolved? How have they changed, if at all?
Well, I think there are a lot of the similar challenges that have existed on the desktop now starting to reappear on mobile devices, security being a big one,
mm-hmm.
And especially since smartphones and to some extent tablets are easier to lose, certainly than a desktop computer, but also easier to lose than a laptop computer. You leave it in the seat pocket in front of you on the airplane or on the bus or on the train. So the protection of that information on the device is a hot topic. What happens if you lose it? Are you able to make sure that it's properly protected or encrypted so that people aren't reading your personal information or any of your information about your business?
The big security issue surrounding mobile devices is bring your own device, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is John Landwehr of Adobe, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here's Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge, Software Defined What? Brought to you by VMware.
One of the main concerns across federal agencies is the type of data that they have in their data centers, the privacy information, and even more sensitive and national security information that data loss prevention policies can be defined in the software-defined data center and block things from happening, not automatically, and also notify security folks to go look into and analyze situations as they occur.
It's almost like a user log can be developed just based on those policies saying, well, who took the data and when, and what did they do with it, and however often is necessary.
To try and boil it down to its most basic, it's going from a reactive approach to security to a proactive approach to security, which is a very powerful shift.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
The year was 1957. The date was October 4th, and Americans woke up to a strange new reality. The first satellite launched into space wasn't ours. The Russians had gotten there first. Sputnik 1 may have been the size of a beach ball, but it was the space shot heard round the world.
Today, a new moon is in the sky.
And it galvanized the nation into action. The Martin Company rose to meet the challenge. Then, on St. Patrick's Day, 1958, a Martin-built Vanguard rocket roared into space with a Shamrock taped to its side and put the world's first solar-powered satellite into orbit. 4 months later, the president signed the legislation that created NASA. The rest, as they say, is history. A history that is still being written by the scientists and engineers of Lockheed Martin. Their story is our story. See it unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
It's official. Federal employees are stuck with the pay freeze for at least 9 more months. An extension of the freeze was included as part of the budget deal passed by Congress to fund agencies through the remainder of fiscal year 2013. Feds have been under a pay freeze since January 1st, 2011. President Barack Obama has proposed a pay increase of 1% in 2014, but ultimately that will have to be negotiated by Congress.
The start of a new year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. As a superior alternative or supplement to FEGLI, WEPA provides more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more.
A virus goes missing at a federal lab. That's from this week's headlines. I'm Emily Kopp. On Friday's Federal Drive, Government Auditor Nancy Kingsbury tells us how safe our high-containment labs really are and whether the government needs so many of them in the first place. And a new cybersecurity law limits the technology agencies can buy. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. John Landwehr of Adobe is my guest on Industry Chatter today. We talked in the last segment, John, about security, and bring your own device is maybe the biggest security issue that people are thinking about in the security space right now. How has that whole conversation impacted the kinds of things that agencies are trying to figure out? It was one thing when they knew exactly what devices were going to be on their network for the foreseeable future, not just today. And that's, you know, my network might look entirely different a year from now than it does today based on wherever technology goes between now and then. How's that impacted the way that people are trying to formulate strategies?
Well, I think there's an evolution of bring your own device that has gone from just providing the hardware for another data plan that's being provided by the agency, to wanting to get email, to then being able to browse the web, and then you start getting into applications and whether they're intranet applications you want to access on the device, which then gets to virtual private networks running on the device, and well, how do I get inside the firewall to have access to that data? And once you're inside the firewall, whether it's email or browsing content management systems and bringing that data to the device, when that data stays on the device, that's where you start to run into some concerns, because again, if that device is lost or stolen, what about the sensitive information on it? And a number of the solutions out there provide, of course, the remote kill switch on the device. So if you lose it, you call your IT department, say, hey, I left it on the plane. Can you please wipe it clean? And sometimes that works great. But, of course, you can imagine there are challenges if you left it in the seat pocket in front of you on the plane, because typically you turn the radio off when you do that. Or you may run low on battery and somebody could find that lost device that didn't get the kill bit signal because it either didn't have the radio on because you're on an airplane or because the battery drained. And then you worry about what data is on the device and how is it protected. And that's where you hear terms like jailbreaking or rooting of these devices, mm-hmm. where people plug in the USB cables and start pulling all the documents off of it. What we've seen is kind of the best approach to persistently protect that data is by putting something like rights management on that content. And that provides encryption not just at kind of the container layer, but also at the file layer, so that if a file accidentally or even intentionally goes somewhere it shouldn't, it's persistently protected and will effectively contact an internal policy server to say, does this person in this location have access to this content? Whether it's personally identifiable information, privacy-related things, or even national security content, you're persistently protecting that asset across smartphones, tablets, PCs. Can even tie into things like the PIV smart card badges that have been rolled out to strongly authenticate users to that content. Again, just to protect against lost devices as well as accidents or even, we hear often a lot of people that send an email to the wrong person, right, with the wrong attachments. That helps protect against that, again, because you've got things well locked down within the file itself.
Now, maybe I'm biased, and when I think about and hear people talking about mobile computing, because I do have a smartphone, I don't use a tablet device, but it seems to me that a lot of the focus on mobility, especially in government right now, is on smartphones, and maybe that's because of the citizen component. But, I mean, you can't go to a government event and turn more than once without seeing a whole handful of people that are using tablets. What's the difference, if any, between security geared toward tablet users and security geared toward smartphone users?
Well, and they're really blurring in many ways because the operating systems often are common between the smartphone implementation like an iPhone and iPad, or even within the Android world where it's actually the very same operating system. It's just a larger screen and perhaps a few more capabilities that go along with it. And again, with the screen size, it's about optimizing the content to fit that screen. And fortunately, there are tools out there that can help developers write an application once that will dynamically adjust the screen size, not only within a platform, but also across platforms. Like the open source PhoneGap application allows you to build these apps that can go in the app stores, all powered by, you know, a single website content management system, but yet you get the native Android look and feel. You get the native iOS, iPhone, iPad look and feel. You can still get BlackBerry capabilities along with it, making that kind of cross-platform environment easier and easier to do.
The cross-platform part of it is something that agencies struggled with. We talked about this a little bit before we went on the air, that agencies struggled with because it was really cool and fun to have apps for the iPhone and for the iOS. because they were kind of the leaders on all of this. What difference will it make from both the agency perspective that they're pushing these applications out, whether they're web or they're native apps? And what difference will it make for the end user, for the either the person inside the agency that's using it or the citizen that's using it, that this is now possible for somebody to create once and use it many different ways?
Well, I think there are a number of dimensions to think about. We talked about the browser versus the installable app. You've got the various platforms and form factors that you want to support. As you look at the native installable applications, again, that come from either the public app stores or enterprise app stores are now becoming more popular on the intranet as well. With an installed application, you often get a better user experience, seamless transition between the pages of content. You get the ability to cache content offline. So if you have intermittent connectivity in some locations, that can be very helpful. It also can make the application feel faster when you are caching that local content. Plus, you can take into account a number of the features of the device itself, like the camera. So if you need to fill out a form and you want to take a picture of the pothole maybe that needs to be fixed, you know, you can point your camera phone at the pothole, take a picture, insert it right into the form. You can also incorporate GPS location capability, so you know exactly where that form was filled out. You can have inter-application messaging, perhaps with some other services that are on the device. Whereas within the browser, you've got a little bit more limited interface on kind of simple forms that go across devices.
Now, when you talk about some of the capabilities there, they're capabilities I've heard of before, but my sense is that in the government space, at least, I don't know about the private sector space, but in the government space, at least, there's still plenty of room to leverage all of these different possibilities. Is that a policy issue, do you think, or is it just a conceptual or kind of an abstract issue, because it really requires somebody to think differently than you've thought before? Think about, instead of thinking, what does this do, whatever the technology is, you have to think of what's possible or what would be the highest and best use that we could get out of this.
Right. And I think it takes a combination of thinking about not only what you have that you want to present externally in citizen-facing workflows, but also of course, putting yourself in the shoes of the public and thinking outside in. What do the people want and need from the government, and how can you best provide that on the platforms that they have? Thinking about, you know, what devices are they going to use, and mobile still is relatively new, right? We found that one way that an agency can kind of get a handle on where their users are interacting with their content is to deploy analytics. So on their existing website, they can instrument it to measure the interaction with the public and see what percentage of the traffic is coming from a smartphone versus a tablet, to then help guide kind of the design and development process to see, wow, I've got a lot of mobile users. I better start targeting more of my content to them. We found in some cases, there was one agency we worked with last year that found their smartphone traffic, I think, went up 140% in a single year, and their tablet traffic went up 350%. And, of course, one of the simplest tests that anyone can do is simply try to open your website and use all your citizen services from a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
See what happens. Does it work? Is it usable? Is it readable? Very often we find that the website will render, but the font is so small you can't view it, and even some websites don't even let you kind of pinch to zoom and scroll in. So you got to get out your magnifying glass on your 4-inch smartphone screen to kind of see what you're clicking on.
My guest is John Landwehr of Adobe on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute. This is In Depth with Francis Rose.
–
Here's Frank Konecki, Chief Technology Officer, U.S. Air Force, on the Federal Executive Forum on Security in a Virtual World, sponsored by Technica Corporation.
We want to have an enterprise cloud, meaning that from any data facility, we can roll over to any other data facility as necessary to support the resiliency that's required, as well as having a standardized platform as a service that we are going to go to, so it increases our efficiency as well as decreasing costs.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezent Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Is your agency's data as secure as it should be? Technica has specialized in solving government IT challenges for DISA, the FBI, and other federal customers for over 20 years. Technica's certified engineers and product solution experts can recommend a range of options, from data center consolidation to cloud computing. With their convenient contract options, Technica provides the secure telecommunications and engineering solutions your agency needs. To learn more, visit technicacorp.com. That's technicacorp.com.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Sequestration stays in place, but a government shutdown is averted as Congress agrees on a continuing resolution to fund agencies until the end of September. The spending bill allows for more money for food inspectors and college assistants for active duty military, but leaves in place the federal pay freeze and across-the-board cuts that mean furloughs for thousands of feds. Now that 2013 appropriations are settled, Congress will tackle the 2014 budget and work to find a way out of the sequestration.
Hi, I'm Paul Rinaldi, President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Our economy relies on a growing, vibrant, efficient aviation system. But unless Congress acts now, mandatory budget cuts totaling over $500 million over the next several months will drastically hurt the nation's aviation system. That means delays, reduced air services, and a negative impact on our nation's economy. Help us urge Congress to stop these cuts and keep our aviation system the safest, most efficient system in the world. Visit us at NATCA.org. NACA.org.
What is the U.S. Census Bureau's technology innovation strategy? How is Census using new technologies to improve services and products? What is Census doing to leverage innovation and advanced technology while balancing the stewardship between innovation and technology? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer, U.S. Census Bureau, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. A recent study is the first to shed key details about young people who have been HIV positive since birth.
They acted very much like their HIV uninfected peers in that they started having sex, or at least some of them did, during their teenage years.
Dr. Rohan Hazra at the NIH adds, other expectations for this group are similar to their HIV uninfected peers.
We also expect that they're going to graduate from high school, that they're going to go to college, that they're going to get jobs, and that they're going to be productive citizens in society.
For more on this NIH-funded study, visit www.nichd.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi, this is Joe Mantegna. Every time my Uncle Willie tells me about his service in Patton's Third Army in World War II, I'm reminded of what we owe the U.S. Army. 14 generations of American soldiers who have courageously defended our nation. Their stories represent the best of America and should never be forgotten. Join me to help build the National Museum of the United States Army, a long overdue tribute to all American soldiers. To learn more, visit armyhistory.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is John Landwehr, Vice President of Digital Government Solutions for Adobe Systems. And you said something during the break that I want to talk more about, and that's the concept of mobile in a silo, and agencies doing it and thinking of, oh, yes, and by the way. And this is kind of an MO that we've seen in the federal government probably since there's been a federal government. Cybersecurity was done this way. Oh, yeah, in the early days, oh, yeah, we have to make sure that this is secure, too. That's changed. Are you starting to see that idea of mobile in a silo changing? Are we evolving to that mobile-first idea that OMB wants to see?
We're seeing a lot of momentum for mobile first across the government, which has been similar to what the commercial world has done, where a lot of the banking industry, as well as, you know, news, weather, sports, you know, want to make sure their content is consumable by the public. I think the challenge initially was that in the race to get something running, they got stuck in a silo for a particular platform. So they said, okay, I got to go out and hire some Objective-C developers to build my iPhone app. And then Android started catching up on market share. And they said, okay, now I got to run out and get my Java developers to build an Android app. And then Microsoft released Windows Phone, and they have yet another developer environment. And then BlackBerry has their own developer environment. And I think it's challenging if you get stuck in a silo where you have to have different developer skill sets for each of the platforms and then have multiple versions of the application that may not always have the same features. So if you've got an Android phone and an iPad tablet and the application is different and has different features, of course, that's going to frustrate users. And that's where I think a lot of these content management systems and mobile application frameworks provide a much better way to have a consistent environment, not only across these mobile devices, but also still bridging back to the desktop, because desktop's not going away anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's really an and, not an or. You need to maintain your desktop presence and expand to mobile, both with browser-based content as well as installable apps, and look for ways to kind of update your page or your content once and make sure every form factor can get it, so that you're not updating, you know, five or more different silos of, okay, I got to go update the desktop web page. Now I got to update the mobile web page. Nope, this new platform came out. I got to hire more developers to get there. So I think that's where a lot of the cross-platform technologies really can help out.
Now, we've talked about smartphones and tablets in the context of mobile computing. A friend of mine last weekend and I were talking about this phenomenon, and this person said, well, don't forget about laptops. Technically, they count as mobile computing, and yet since they're not the coolest, newest technology, people seem to act like nobody ever uses them anymore. And you mentioned the fact that the mobile computers are already surpassing desktops. Laptops surpassed desktops a long time ago. And so the mix, the inventory of possibilities in an agency's, on an agency's network is more diverse than it's ever been before. What's the role of the laptop now in a mobile computing environment?
Well, and the line is really getting blurred. Mm-hmm. So with the latest release of Windows devices, they now have Windows-based tablets. So it's a touch-based interface, and with the latest, I guess, Windows 8 Pro release, you can even run your existing applications now in a 10-inch tablet form factor, all with a touch screen, and then put a Bluetooth keyboard on it and a nice kind of folio case like you've seen with iPads. So I think that is going to be very interesting to watch, because a lot of the original tablet platforms required new management tools, new security infrastructure, management asset tracking, a number of things. And here you have one of the established players looking to more from the desktop to the laptop, now to the tablet devices, where it's the same enterprise infrastructure, but yet getting better battery life, touch-based interface, strong security, even with fingerprint readers now on tablets. So instead of having a PIN code that your children can shoulder surf you typing in, as many of us have discovered, you know, you have to swipe your fingerprint on the back and able to log in and download apps from the App Store. So it's great to see the evolution of the technology, and I think all these platforms continue to evolve, and we're starting to see the lines definitely blur on the form factors.
It's interesting that you talk about the Surface, because one of the – I read recently that the best-selling accessory for the iPad is a Bluetooth keyboard. I see them all over town, and it strikes me that that's not what the device was intended for, but it doesn't matter anymore what the device is intended for. And I wonder if that's the mentality that should be applied to strategizing how you're going to do a mobile strategy. That's the way to think because that's the way the end user thinks, I suppose.
Right, and I think the form factor, again, there are a lot of things to think about. What I've really enjoyed about having a tablet, and I've been carrying one around for 2 years now and no longer carry a laptop, is the weight reduction and the battery life increase, right, that you can now be even more productive on the plane. You can be more productive at conferences and taking notes. I did get one of the Folios with the Bluetooth keyboards in it, though, because I found that if I went to an all-day conference and I had the tablet in my lap and I was typing on the glass, mm-hmm. your fingers start to hurt after a while when you're tapping a solid surface that mm-hmm. has no give to it. So I got the Bluetooth keyboard and a little flip case. Added a little bit of weight to it, but the battery life is not impacted because it's a low power device. And kind of having that combination of being able to type quickly, especially if you're in a session and need to take a lot of notes, but still having the touch based interface has been very helpful.
My guest is John Landwehr of Adobe Systems, talking about mobility and collaborations, where we're going to go next, John, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter, and we'll be back in a moment.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
I'm Stacey Redman, President and CEO of Strategy and Management Services, or SAMS. SAMS is an SBA 8A business that provides a broad range of strategy, management, and IT-related services to federal government agencies and commercial clients. Since 2011, we've gone from 4 employees to 80 employees. This growth would not have been possible without Insperity. Insperity gives us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Federal News Radio is looking for your input. What do you like most about Federal News Radio 1500 AM and our website, federalnewsradio.com? Is there anything you'd like to see us do differently? We're interested in learning more about how you use our various platforms as we continue to improve them. Take our brief anonymous survey and tell us about your experience with our website and radio station. Find it online at federalnewsradio.com and be a part of making Federal News Radio work for you.
Join the Coalition for Government Procurement on April 17th for their training conference, Continuing the Dialogue, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. Hear how strategic acquisition can both improve the efficiency of government and provide an opportunity for businesses to offer innovative solutions. Any government and industry professional from across the procurement community should attend this event. Don't miss this opportunity to learn and network with your colleagues from government and industry. Register now at the Coalition for Government Procurement's website, thecgp.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is John Landwehr of Adobe Systems, my guest for Industry Chatter today. And it seems to me, and we talked a little bit about collaboration off the air, John, and it seems to me that that's kind of the next thing for agencies to be thinking about, is ways to use this technology in order for their teams to be able to work better together, especially with the remote work push that is on in the federal government. What are the drawbacks, and what are some of the advantages that maybe agencies aren't taking advantage of yet?
Well, we've seen with online collaboration tools like web conferencing growth in the mobile capabilities, because now you can attend these web conference virtual meetings where you're sharing slides or doing video conference or have kind of the chat running on the side. That's now available on mobile devices as well. So you can reach it on a smartphone. You can reach it on a tablet. You can use the front-facing camera, use it like a video conference system. You can also use the rear-facing camera for situational awareness. So if you're out in the field and you need to broadcast real-time what you're seeing, you can now do it from a commercial off-the-shelf device, just pull out the smartphone and start broadcasting back for situational awareness capabilities. I found personally that I increasingly attend meetings from my mobile devices where I can turn on my smartphone or my tablet with a bigger screen much more quickly than booting up a laptop. I can then share slides. I can have the chat, get the video going for kind of, again, that personal experience. All the audio runs over the connection. And, of course, with 3G and now 4G wireless connections, it's plenty fast to support a very high-definition experience. And I think as organizations are looking to support teleworking and want people to be able to participate not only in meetings but also training, we see as a great opportunity from these devices that are already providing virtual electronic books, they can now provide electronic training materials, right? So you've got courseware that is very easy to take with you on the train or the plane or the bus, put your headphones in, and be brushing up on any number of topics because it's all right there on your tablet, which is much easier than pulling out a laptop, right? That the tablet, again, provides more of that book-like experience for learning versus something heavy sitting on your lap.
Now, are agencies, do you think, leveraging all of the possibilities to the degree that they can? Because it sounds like there are tremendous potential for cost savings here at a time when that's very, very popular, needless to say. And I just wonder if they're seeing the ability to get a return on investment quickly, or if your observation is that that things are so tight budget-wise that even trying to get started is difficult.
Well, there are a number of areas where we've seen the online collaboration tools actually pick up over the last few months. One of them is with Defense Connect Online, DCO, that DISA runs for the Department of Defense that provides an online collaboration service where their traffic really started spiking over the last few months as travel was being cut back, conferences were being cut back, and yet people still wanted to be collaborative. Working across their organizations and in remote areas that they couldn't otherwise travel to. And that had DISA then announce, I guess it was within the last month, that they're going to double the capacity of DCO Online to meet this need where people are now spending more time online because they aren't able to get that face-to-face contact that they have been having in the past due to the travel cutbacks.
When we come back, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, I want to get your thoughts on some success stories, people who are doing these kinds of things that we've been talking about very well, because we get bogged down, I think, sometimes in the problems that people have. And I'd like to hear who you think is doing any of these things that we've talked about today very well. John Landwehr of Adobe is my guest on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
Here's Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge, Software Defined What? Brought to you by VMware.
The most important thing to remember is that software defined in the data center makes things so much more agile that many business processes are supported as a result. The business processes that require scalability, like expansion for either closing the books at the end of the quarter or the end of the year, or anything else that requires the business to scale due to periodic needs that they have. In addition, the agility supports this emerging concept called brokering, because the performance requirements, the scalability requirements, and the security requirements of the workload move with that workload. And they're more agile, so as they move to another service provider's cloud, the performance, scalability, and security capabilities go with it, and they're met rather than having to be manually recoded.
To hear the entire show, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
So, I got my lab results, asked my doctor a question, ordered my prescription refill, and made appointments with another specialist this morning.
That must have taken forever.
Nope. I did it all in my client's waiting room, just before the 10 o'clock meeting.
How?
Kaiser Permanente. They not only have some of the largest private multi-specialty medical groups in the world, they also have 9 million members with electronic medical records. I can get mine on my smartphone no matter where I am.
Even next week when you're in Canada?
Yep. As a Kaiser Permanente member, I can access my medical record, email my doctor's office, and make routine appointments, whether I'm in Ontario or Paris or Des Moines.
So you didn't lose your whole morning?
Not one billable minute. Kaiser Permanente has the future of healthcare figured out. It's all about connectivity, and I love it. Smartest move I ever made. Besides going to work for this firm, of course.
Kaiser Permanente. Join now and connect with a full care team from day one. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show. Tune in next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 and 820 a.m. to hear the latest from the food and wine scene. We've got celebrity chefs, sommeliers, winemakers, and more all here to tell you about the inside skinny that you won't find anywhere else. That's Foodie and the Beast this Sunday at 11.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for March is the Washington Regional Transplant Community. Did you know that every day people have the opportunity to be a hero? Becoming a hero is as simple as registering to become an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Do it whenever you obtain or renew your driver's license, or register online now at beadonor.org. You might just save a life. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. John Landwehr of Adobe Systems is my guest on Industry Chatter. And we were talking during the break about the form factors, kind of continuing that conversation. And the topic came up that tablets had killed the netbook. And this is the reason I'm not a technology prognosticator, because 2 or 3 years ago, maybe it's longer now, before tablets became so ubiquitous, I was convinced that the netbook was the next big thing. And they were popular, I think, for like 20 minutes or something like that before the first iPad came out. And now they're pretty much just called small laptops again, as they were when they first came out. How do you think through that possibility when you're trying to formulate a mobile strategy, that what's popular today may or may not be still in the mix 2 years from now or 5 years from now?
I think that can be challenging, especially as you're looking at replacement costs, retraining costs, with the different form factors, user interfaces. Some of these devices don't have replaceable batteries in it. So when the battery goes, you know, time to get a new device. Some of the new form factors that are coming out do have replaceable batteries, which also can be helpful if you're traveling or in the field all day and don't have the opportunity to recharge. So I think it a lot is based on the application workflow that you have and whether it's an employee-facing type of application where you're out doing field service or spending time with the people or driving around, kind of what your form factors are, and then can, of course, be even more challenging because from a public-facing citizen view, you need to support the most popular devices. And again, that's where a lot of advances in HTML and web programming have made it easier for designers and developers to get across these platforms. But as we discussed, you still need to think carefully on how much do I want to be just in the browser versus having an app that people are going to use and interact with frequently, perhaps with advanced functionality that a browser doesn't provide.
Now, when you talk about being accessible through the most popular devices, that's another wrinkle, because what we think is the most popular device or set of devices today may not be at some point in the future. That takes us to the term device agnosticism, and it's kind of, we've kind of danced around that throughout the course of our conversation about the ways that you can be on any number of different platforms. Will that become, do you think, more important in the coming years or less important in the coming years?
I think right now it's very important to be looking at all of these devices. Not that long ago, it was a little bit easier when you just had to worry about Mac and Windows and maybe some Linux on the desktop. At Adobe, we've been thinking cross-platform for years, that people often forget the P in PDF is for portable document format. And when that was introduced in the early 90s, it was MS-DOS, mm-hmm. then Windows and Mac. And we started looking at kind of the first expansion of mobile platforms with a good old Palm Pilot. And I think that was around 2001 that we wrote the first mobile app for the free Adobe Reader to view PDFs on the Palm Pilot platform, and then, you know, evolved to iPhones and Androids and Windows Phone and other platforms. But, you know, I think there's right now a lot of choices for consumers and businesses to look through, and it's very important as you're publishing content to make sure that you're getting to the broadest set of those devices possible.
Now, you use the word that we come back to, and we kind of talked about it at the beginning of the conversation, and so I think it's kind of fitting to come back at the end, and that's the word content, and that's really ultimately what the goal is to deliver information of some sort from the people who have the information, in the case of the audience that listens to the show, it's the federal government, to the people who want to consume it. And in some cases, those are people who work inside the government who are using that information. In some cases, it's the average citizen. I guess that's ultimately how you would advise government leaders to continue to think, is about the content and not as much about the vehicles through which that content's delivered?
I would say it's a combination of thinking about the content as well as the consumer, where the consumer is either the citizen or the employee, and to put yourself in their shoes and say, what is the best way for that person to consume this content? And am I going to be able to support the needs of my employees on the mobile device platforms they have, especially with BYOD rollouts, as well as the public view? And I think it's a little bit different than thinking about it from an IT infrastructure, data center, cloud perspective out, but to think about it from the people back in. You know, how are they going to consume my content? How are they going to submit electronic forms? Is they're providing information back to the government when they're registering for various programs, making sure that it's not just a one-way transaction, but is engaging and round trip, and you're able to send in your forms and fill things out as well as just consume them.
And with just about a minute left, what are the two or three things that I should be thinking about in the mobile space to keep myself in that mode as opposed to getting into the technology and nuts and bolts mode over the next year or two?
Well, I think for mobility, again, it's a lot about form factors, right? As we're getting laptops and tablets blurring, we're getting smartphones and tablets blurring. I think there are a lot of great technology platforms to choose from. They all have different strengths and capabilities with them. And our recommendation is really to look at what's the best tool for the job as you're looking at internal employee-facing applications. But then again, using things like analytics and measuring how the public's interacting with your content and your sites to make sure that you're reaching them on the most important platforms they have as that continues to evolve in the industry.
We're almost out of time. It's been great to have you on the program today, John. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
John Landwehr of Adobe is my guest for Industry Chatter today, and you can find this program archived later today at federalnewsradio.com. Hour number two of the program's next.